Chawa, Tuck to Newsome, Salama. Welcome to listener-supported KTOO and Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. It's a Friday. We're happy to have the weekend coming. We thank you for joining the conversation today. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, we have Navy Band Northwest in the house, fresh off their Juno Jazz and Classics concert last night and gearing up for tomorrow's Maritime Festival appearance. We'll hear some tunes, we're going to blow out the studio a little bit, and we'll chat with a couple members of the band. Waterways is an exhibit over at Liège Studios. We'll chat with Christine Carpenter and Christine Kleinhens about the exhibit, which will be up all this month. And Global Bird Migration Day is coming up. We'll talk with Juno Audubon about what's in store. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. All right, and now live from the red carpet stage, it's the Navy Band Northwest. Take it away, boys! Thank you. Oh my goodness, that was amazing. Awesome. I have my headphones turned up so much I scared myself when I started talking. This is Juno Afternoon on KTO. Sam and the boys, come on over, have a seat at these microphones over here. Let's do a little chatting and find out a little bit about Navy Band Northwest. Gwyneth Cheesh for being here today. Wasiati, how are you today, Sam?
I'm doing great, Boston. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for bringing the Navy Band Northwest into Juno as well as onto Juno Afternoon. Can you introduce these other boys for me here?
Absolutely. To my right, musician second class, Wesley Carroll, played in the trumpet.
Wesley.
And then and to his right, our boss, Lieutenant David Drescher.
Lieutenant Dave, or David.
That's fine.
Whatever works. That's so great. So tell me a little bit about Navy Band Northwest. Where does it start? What is its purpose? What is it doing? How are we in Juno? Maybe we'll start with Lieutenant David.
Sure. Well, first, thanks again for having us. Really appreciate the opportunity. So Navy Band Northwest is one of 11 bands for U.S. Navy music worldwide. And our area of operations goes from Nebraska to Alaska and everywhere in between. We work for Commander Navy Region Northwest as his outreach arm to kind of spread kind of awareness of what the Navy does, and our part in, supporting, the larger Navy mission.
I see. Okay. Now, I understand, I think, if this is correct. So, like, Wesley, let me ask you. So, you enlist in the Navy to be in the band specifically,
right? That's right, yes.
Okay, yeah. So tell me a little bit about that decision.
Sure.
What brought you to decide, oh, hey, I want to be in Navy Band Northwest, or I guess Navy Band anywhere of the 11 chapters?
Sure.
Tell me your story about
sure.
that.
Sure. So getting into the Navy music program is a little bit different from getting into the rest of the Navy. We have a small community, so we only have job openings when somebody decides to leave that community. Because of that, we have auditions. So anybody who's interested in joining the Navy Music Program auditions first to see if they're qualified. If they win that audition, then they get to go and talk to a recruiter, and then they start their Navy journey from there.
I see.
Myself, personally, I was in college at the University of Illinois. Always knew I wanted to perform for a living. I'm a third-generation military. My uncle was Army and my grandfather a naval aviator. So military has always been something that's been somewhat on my radar, although the bands, I'd never really heard of them until I heard of an audition and went down to Millington, Tennessee, where we hold our auditions, and the rest is history.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So do you have to do, I mean, this is just so curious to me, but do you have to do like boot camp still?
Yep.
You still
got
to go do boot camp, even though is there ever a chance that you would be taken out of the band and put into service on a naval ship somewhere?
Well, as musicians, we do deploy as part of bands. So we've got three overseas bands, one in Japan, one in Hawaii, and one in Italy. And we go out on ships regularly as a part of larger missions, like humanitarian missions.
Okay.
We've got two that are pretty regular, Pacific Partnership that covers Southeast Asia, and then Continuing Promise that services the Caribbean and South America. So,
oh, wow.
We'll go out as a part of those kind of humanitarian efforts to kind of, again, build partnerships, right?
Yeah.
To kind of bring a little bit of music to those places.
I love that. Yep. Now, Sam, you, as Wesley was telling me, so you can decide to be in the band for as long as you want to be. Could you be in this for your life and then retire as a Navy musician?
Well, any sailor in the Navy has the option of retiring at 20 years, if you can make it that long. It's some people, choose to get out and, only do one enlistment, and that's, that's fine. That's their choice. And but I've personally made it my career, so I'm going to go
the full
20.
How long have you been in?
In August, it'll be 17 years.
17 years.
That's right.
Wow, and have you been playing the drums that whole time?
The entire time.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so Wesley's younger, I think, than you, Sam. Yep. So that's a relatively newer story. But can you go back to 17 years ago and what brought you into the Navy band?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I always knew I was going to be a musician from a young age. So I went to school for music, a bachelor's degree in percussion performance, and a master's degree in jazz studies. And then after that, it was kind of like scratching my head, what am I going to do? Took an audition for the Navy bands and won the audition. Yeah, that was 2009 that I enlisted.
Wow.
And I've been stationed in some pretty interesting places. Chicago. I spent some time overseas in Naples, Italy. I was an instructor at our Navy School of Music in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and then stationed in San Diego, and then now in Bremerton, just outside of Seattle.
That's so cool. So tell me what, like, the daily life of a Navy band musician is like. What is a week for you in the Navy band, let's say?
Oh, boy. Well, see, the cool thing is it's not really a typical week.
That's cool.
It's different. I would say probably every week it's something different. You know, just kind of the nature of being a musician. You have, like, these one-off gigs, and a big part of what we do is ceremonial support as well.
Right.
For military ceremonies, and those are always, just a bit different.
Yeah.
In addition to playing music, however, basically anything that has to do with running the band, we also do.
Okay.
So when it comes to booking the gigs or doing paperwork or supply inventory, that sort of thing, it's stuff that we all do in-house. So in addition to our musical duties, we do other sort of like housekeeping.
Now, I don't know why, I've just flashed on this. Is it like a firehouse where you all are staying in the same place and you have to clean the latrine and somebody make the food and do all that kind of stuff? Or is it... Do you have like homes in where your home base is, and then you all meet up at the base, let's say?
Oh yeah, we all live separate from each other.
Okay. I don't think they'd want to live together. It looks like they're like, no, thank you.
It have its perks, but
yeah, that's kind of fun. It's just so interesting to me. So when you're not like booking gigs and touring to the Juno, what is an off day? Is it when you're not having to do stuff for the band, there's still things you have to do on the job that are other duties as assigned, as they say?
Yeah, nothing specific to the Navy, but okay. I mean, as a musician, you have to maintain your skill set. So practicing is a big part of our life. And most of us also play as civilians as well and do other things kind of outside of the uniform and to maintain our skills and maintain those networks and connections.
I see. Now, Wesley, when you go into something like this, does it seem, I don't want to get into specifics about pay because I'm sure there's ranks of pay as you go and you get raises over the time, I'm imagining. Mm-hmm. But is it a pretty good life for a young musician?
It's fantastic. One thing that appealed to me before I had gotten this job was the stability of it.
Yeah.
Since we're employees of the government, you can see anything that we like our entire pay chart based on rank and time and service. So that's no secret to anybody. It's a basically a 9-to-5. You know, we work when we're not doing trips or other gigs like that. We work Monday through Friday. We all show up to work. Be at work. Our band is at work by 9. Mm. We work until our jobs are complete for the day, and then we go home and get to, have hobbies and do other things like that,
sure.
Which is a pretty unique thing in the musician world.
Yeah, because I'm imagining, I'm just going to pull the gentleman in the background here. Is this life a little bit more secure? I guess it is. I know the answer. Than the gig economy of like trying to be a musician on a Saturday night at the jazz club, right? Okay, yeah, it's like a full-time gig where you get to do the thing that you love and you're also bringing joy to people. You know, I'm imagining that wherever you go, like people love the Navy band, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to say that my main job is to make friends with people.
Nice.
It's through music, which is really cool, via spreading awareness about the Navy, we're just trying to connect with whoever we play with. So whether that's here or near our base in Silverdale, Washington, or Nebraska to Alaska, or when we're overseas doing other things like that, just connect with people and see if we can make some friends.
That's very cool. Now, Sam, we're going to play another tune.
Right.
And you told me what it was before, which makes me think of this question, which is how do you all decide, like, what kind of music to play? Because you're going to be throwing us back to the 90s here in a second.
We sure are. Yeah, so this is, I think, the coolest aspect of our job. Even though we're military musicians, we have quite a bit of leeway for creative, for creativity and for kind of deciding programming and things like this. And so, in picking tunes, a lot of times you want to do it kind of based on where you're stationed a little bit.
Right.
So
okay.
We're pretty close to Seattle, and one of the main cultural exports of that area was grunge music back in the 90s. And near and dear to my heart, it was on the radio when I was growing up. So, and currently, a lot of 90s music is more popular again.
It's coming back around.
It sure has. It's come back around. So the kids know it. We play it for the kids at these schools, and they're like, hey, I know that song.
Nice.
We just jumped on the opportunity and arranged it out, and these guys are knocking it out of the park.
And what are you going to play for us?
We're going to play Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden.
Oh, my God. That's so awesome. And then you two can go ahead and get back up there. We'll get ready for that as I ask Lieutenant David this. How do we find out more about the Navy Band Northwest, or if I have a young musician in my family who maybe wants to have a full-time gig here, how do they get involved?
Sure. So to learn more about Navy Band Northwest, we do have a Facebook and Instagram account. So that's pretty straightforward there. Please like and subscribe. That's right. Smash that like button. I think. but for audition information, if you search United States Navy Band, it's the first thing that comes up. At the bottom, there's an auditions page there, and there's a group inbox there. They're always monitoring and a phone number. We're always looking for a talent. We know that the talent's out there. We hear it every day when we're, upcoming. When we're visiting with kids in schools, we know that talent's out there. We're looking for anybody that's interested in steady gig and great playing with great musicians.
Well, Gunnar the Chiefs for being here today. I really appreciate Lieutenant David Wesley and Sam. They're going to rock out with Black Hole Sun here from Soundgarden on Juno Afternoon. They will be tomorrow at the Maritime Festival. I believe the music portion of the day is between 5 and 7 in the afternoon, so you can catch the Navy Band there, along with a bunch of other bands. Local band Rain Dogs is going to be there, the Honey Badgers, a whole bunch of musicians are going to be there tomorrow from 5 to 7 at the Maritime Festival. So once again, from the red carpet stage, live here in Studio 2K at KTOO, it's the Navy Band Northwest. Take it away, boys! Thank you. talking about right there. Thank you, boys. Navy Band Northwest, thank you for being on Juno Afternoon. I really appreciate it. Going to the Chiefs for being here. Wasiat, I hope you're all doing great today and have an awesome time tomorrow at the Maritime Festival. Thanks for coming to Juno.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. That song is called Molly Mine. That's from Chantel Ducart, who has a new album out. You might know Chantel, who also plays for Bamua, as well as a bunch of other places. That's from her new album, which just launched on May 1st, last Friday, which you can check out on all of the live stream services. And speaking of last Friday, and it was First Friday, there's a bunch of art shows that launched, and one of them was Waterways over at Liaise Studios, which is owned by Christine Carpenter, and she joins me now in the studio, also with Christine Kleinhead. And it's welcome in. Gunnath Cheesh, Wasiat, how are you today? Christine Carpenter, Christine C.
Christine C and Christine K.
Yeah. Hello. How are you today?
Good. I'm doing good.
Excellent. And Christine K, how are you today?
Doing great. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So that's so cool. So Liaise Studios, which has now been, how long have you had it now, Christine?
Well, my company has been in existence for I don't know how long, but I opened the studio, like the storefront, a year ago this month. It's been a year.
Woo-hoo,
I know.
A year ago this month.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So, and that's a studio. And tell us where it's located for those who haven't found it yet. It's a little. It's not hard to find, but it's nice and tucked in. It's
yeah. Like, Boston loves me saying that it's on floor 1.5.
Yeah, 1.5.
In the
Senate
Mall.
Like being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
You know. So cool. It's a really great little studio space, and you have this cool exhibit in there called Waterways. And that is going to be up for the entire month of May. It opened last Friday. It's a collaborative art show exploring water as a means and metaphor for material dialogue. So unpack that for me a little bit. How did this show come about?
This show was a brainchild of my friend Jaromir, who's actually in town now because he's here for – I met him through the Alaska Robotics Comics Camp and Minicon.
Okay.
And they are here for the Minicon because the Minicon's happening this weekend.
Yes.
And Yaramir, when I was opening up the idea for getting shows in the space, wanted to do this collaborative show talking about how we're all connected through water. Both, like, it's all a part of who we are and we all need it, but also waterways are all connected. And so my water is your water and your water is my water, no matter where you live. Mm. And so it was really Yaramir's brainchild and just asked if I would help them do it. And so we've been working on it since, when did we start, Christine? January?
Yes, it's been several months.
Yeah. And so artists work together. We paired people up. Mm. We tried to pair people up who were not in the same city.
Oh, interesting.
And they were not working in the same mediums.
Okay.
And they worked together to either make a pair of pieces or to work on one piece together.
Ah,
and most of the people, most of the artists didn't know each other that were paired up together.
Yeah.
And Christine, the reason Christine's here is because she was one of the artists who participated.
Right, right, right. There's a long list here.
Yeah, 19 different artists.
19 different artists. I have the flyer up for those who might be on the stream. You can check that out. But it's also just really cool. I also grabbed a couple of the photos that you gave me for of pieces from the exhibit. And I don't know whose is whose here, but I'm going to do this so you can maybe see it a little bit when I bring these up. But, like, these are just very cool. Like, these kind of pieces are...
That's Christine's piece.
That's Christine Kleinhens's piece. So tell me, so this, describe for the radio listeners what your inspiration was when you, so you, but you paired up with somebody. So did you work on this piece together?
We did.
Okay.
So I paired up with Brenna, who is this fantastic glass artist on the East Coast.
Okay.
And we came together over FaceTime and just started talking about water, what it means to us individually, what we love creating, because, you know, you want to be passionate about what you create as well. And we realized that with her style and my style, we needed to have more of a 3D piece. And in our conversations, she would make suggestions, and I would say, yes, and I would make suggestions. She'd go, oh, yeah, I love that, and how about? So it was this lovely collaborative approach. And in the end, we had an idea of where we wanted to go. We had Ursula rising from the depths, misunderstood. You know, why can't people just understand who she is and see her for her true self, right? We tied in our personal stories a little bit into this as well, and made colorful expressions of what we want people to see us as. And she made Ursula as see-through in order to have the paint that's on the base, the painting that she rests on, she sits on, reflect through her whole entire body. So you see splashes of purples and blues and pinks and yellows kind of flowing off of her many arms. And then I love painting fish, so of course I had to have a school of herrings swimming around her as she moves her tentacles and interacts with them.
It's such a cool piece. Now, I should mention, Christine Carpenter, that this show at your studio is going to be up for the entire month of May, right? So people can come by and check this out if they missed First Friday. Just remind us of the hours of Liaise Studios.
I am now open 5 days a week. It's the first time I've been open 5 days a week from 11 to 6. On Tuesday through Saturday.
Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6. You can check out all of these pieces. Like they said, there's 19 artists here who collaborated together. So did she do the glass and then send it up here to you, and then you sort of put this 3D piece together?
She did. I started painting the base while she was creating because we knew about what size, but I couldn't finalize it without the actual form on top.
Sure.
So, yeah, it was truly a collaboration.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Christine C., I also have this photo here, which is really beautiful. Can you describe this for me and whose this piece is?
That is a work by Natalie Joy Tremblay. She's based out in the Bay Area, and she was partnered with a woman named Hannah, who lives part of the year in Norway and part of the year in Washington.
Oh, wow.
And they made a pair of pieces together. So the piece there is Natalie's piece. I think you also have a picture of Hannah's piece in a minute.
I may not have it for the stream, but yeah.
But they each, Natalie is a cyanotype artist. And okay. Hannah does a lot of collage and line work. And so they each individually made different sheets of paper. So Hannah made these beautiful line drawings on paper, and Natalie was able to actually take her cyanotype work and use rain as her to get cyanotypes of rainfall, which is really beautiful.
That's
and
so
then they swapped
cool.
papers, so Natalie had some of her cyanotypes, and then Hannah sent her some of her line work, and then vice versa, and then they each made collage pieces.
Oh,
out
wow.
of them. Yeah, and they talk. Their descriptions are very. Really beautifully written about what the pieces meant to them and working together with each other, what that meant to them.
What I can't wait to read those because I think that's really cool. And I guess, Christine Kay, you can speak to this a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, are you normally sort of like by yourself as an artist? And so when you collaborate, yeah. like that, is there, tell me the joy that's in
yeah,
that. There's something cool about that.
It really is. And there is a joy in being the troll in your basement and letting paint splash around in your bathrobe, right? No, so.
Yeah.
But there's a very special type of joy in finding connection with somebody else and building off of each other and the excitement of the watching the other person's joy and their eyes light up as you just build this idea together. And then there's no way that I could have made my piece without Ursula Rising, right? Mm-hmm. It's not complete without
That's so
her.
So fascinating. So. And you didn't know the other artist?
No, not at all. We met for the first time while we were talking about our piece together.
Oh, that's so... Do you feel like you might do more collaboration with her in the future?
Oh, or? I would love to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah,
just
always.
Such a fascinating thing to be able to bring that together. And the other two people you just mentioned, Christine C. Carpenter, that, you know, that on the piece that had the cyanotypes, you can actually see it in that work.
Yeah.
You can see, like, the cyanotypes, and then you can see the collage aspect
yeah.
of it. Like, the marrying of those two forms together
yeah.
Is, I don't know, there's something really cool about that.
It was really cool. And each of the groups worked differently together.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people worked on one piece together, like Christine was talking about a piece of glass and a piece of wood coming together. And then other people worked on pieces, like made a pair of pieces. Sherry McDonald, I don't know if people know her in town, and another woman named Mercedes worked on a pair of pieces together that were both collages and then took scans of their drawings and Sherry made this dissolve piece so you can like pull a tab and it transforms from one collage into the other collage.
Oh, wow.
Stunning.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
And then another pair of artists, one person made the base and another person made the plexiglass piece on top. And so there was a poet who wrote a poem and then there was a letterpress printer based out of the UK who had the letter, the poem printed on her letterpress from the UK.
So cool.
It's just been really interesting to see how people work together. And another aspect of this show that we haven't talked about yet is we met as a group three times throughout the collaborative process so that everyone was able to come together and kind of share ideas and talk about their processes and share with each other. That was really mm-hmm. important to both Yaramir and I that this wasn't just a collaboration between two artists. There is a group of three or three artists, but it was a collaborative
process.
Because
there's 19, so yeah. There's an odd number in there
yeah.
for sure. So there was a threesome. so they do you feel like that you've had the studio now for a year
mm-hmm.
and this kind of collaborative art form, do you feel like you'll do more of this in the future? Were you inspired by this particular project?
I loved this. I feel like my studio is really built on the idea about being a liaison, which is where the name Liaise Studio comes
mm-hmm.
from, about being a bridge between creativity and the environment and our community. And I really liked this process. I I'm currently still recovering from the workload that it required to get everything up on the wall all the pieces coming in late. Yeah. So ask me again in like 2 months.
Right. It's kind of like when you have a baby, you got to wait a while before before you think about having that second one for sure.
But I loved it. I found it. Yeah. I didn't actually make a piece for this. I decided to just stay as the curator and organizer of the show. Jaromir did make a piece, and so you can come check it out. But I really like the idea of bringing artists together. And Christine is also really, really good at this. I feel like she she also is the owner of the Bear's Lair, which is downstairs from my studio.
Oh, right. Sure.
And so and Christine's also had her store for a little over a year now.
Yeah, you took that over. True. Yeah, you got that is it a year and a half or so? Or
we opened the first weekend in April. So,
April. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right on.
We're
yeah.
both having birthdays.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. And the Senate Mall is alive and kicking.
Yeah. Come hang out with us.
Yeah. So Liaise Studios, 11 to 6, Tuesday through Saturday. You can see this show. Go visit the Bear's Lair. You can say hi to Christine Kleinhens as well. And then what's next for you both in terms of artwork and art shows for you individually? What about you, Christine Carpenter?
I am going to Norway next month for an artist residency.
Ooh.
And I'm really excited because this is a actually one of the artists in the show is the organizer of this artist residency, which is how I met her how she got involved in the program too. There's no stipulations on this residency. I get to go and make whatever I want to make for an entire week in rural Northern Norway, and I'm stoked about it.
That is so cool. Well, I appreciate you being here. What about for you, Miss Christine Kleinhens? What's next?
You know, this year I'm really enjoying promoting other artists in my store and getting to know people and curating their works, and right now that's bringing me immense joy.
Awesome. That's so cool. Well, you can check out this show, Waterways. It's over at Liaise Studios for the month of May, Tuesday through Saturday from 11 to 6. Gwyneth Cheesh for being here. I really appreciate it. And coming on and talking a little bit about the show. It sounds really cool. I can't wait to come by and check it out.
Yeah, come check it out. Gwyneth Cheesh. Yeah.
Gwyneth Cheesh. Thank you so much. This is Juno Afternoon on KTO. We'll be right back with World Migration Bird Day. Global Migratory Bird Day, I think it is. Yeah, it's going to be really cool. We'll be right back. This is Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
This is Bird Note. The fluting song of the wood thrush is an ethereal sound of summer in North America. From April to September, these robin-sized songsters serenade deciduous forests of the eastern U.S. and Canada. Each fall, they migrate to rainforests from southern Mexico to Panama, where they call to each other from the underbrush. For wood thrushes, not just any woods will do. They depend on large blocks of intact forest throughout their range. Unfortunately, wood thrushes are losing habitat as humans convert vibrant forests to pastures, mines, and urban developments. As the remaining forests become smaller and scattered, the wood thrush are left with less food and more threats from predators. We can help wood thrushes and forest birds everywhere by conserving and restoring woodlands throughout the Americas. That includes planting native trees in urban green spaces and buying bird-friendly coffee that's cultivated without destroying the crucial habitats that support the wood thrush's priceless song. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
You're listening. listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I have in the studio now, I have Gwen and Brenda from the Juno Audubon Society. We are going to be talking about World Migratory Bird Day, which is officially worldwide tomorrow, but there's going to be an event that they will be hosting here in Juno on Sunday, May 17th from, I think, 8 to 10 a.m., because that's what the bird people do. They get up early. Welcome in to Gwen and Brenda. Thank you so much for joining us, Wasiati. How are you today, Gwen?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. And Brenda, welcome back. How are you today?
I got birds in my eyes.
You got Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about first World Migratory Bird Day. I know you were mentioning to me before we got on here, Gwen, that there's a couple things coming up. But let's talk about World Migratory Bird Day and what is that?
Yeah, so it is just simply a celebration of migratory birds. The day was founded by the Environment for the Americas. That's a nonprofit actually based in Colorado. Mm. And the idea was to promote bird conservation, first nationwide and then worldwide. It started, I want to say, in the early 90s, so it's been going on for a while. And they produce a lot of conservation materials and posters and just things to promote the appreciation of birds and their habitat. And there's a theme every year. And this year's theme is Every Bird Counts. It's about citizen science and the role that people can play in bird conservation by just reporting their observations and participating in bird studies.
I think you mentioned that last time you were here, Brenda, when we were talking about the walks that happen each week now in the spring. And we were talking about that. Every bird counts. Like, that's a really cool thing, because we were talking about all these bird counting apps that you can get. You can find out ways to figure out what you're listening to or what you're seeing with various different apps.
Yeah, these marvelous apps are free.
Free apps that you can use. So is this day more of a celebration, or are people actually doing any kind of counting this year on this particular thing?
Yeah, so on Saturday, tomorrow, May 8th, there is the eBird Global Big Day.
Okay.
And that is to try to get literally everybody in the world to go watch birds and submit their checklist.
Okay.
On the eBird app, which is, it's a phone app, or if you're old like I am now, you can do it on the regular computer too, online,
okay,
on the web. So there's different ways to do it. But essentially, you just need to note where you were, when you started birding, how many people you had, and what birds you were able to identify. And if you can only identify a few, that's okay. It's really just whatever level you are, you can participate.
And is there a walk as well tomorrow, Brenda?
No, we were going to do something extra special tomorrow, and because the site we were going to use was over knee-deep in snow, we decided to postpone it.
Still waiting for some of that snow to get out of there. Yeah,
but we have lots and lots of recommendations of where to go, because the shorebirds are in town.
Okay, good. Yeah, if I want to go out tomorrow and do it on my own, I know there's going to be an event in a week or so, but tomorrow if I want to do it, where do you suggest I go tomorrow, Brenda?
Well, a great place to go, of course, is Eagle Beach, or along the Mendenhall River, anywhere along the wetlands in the Mendenhall. A lot of these birds come here just to sit down and eat, because they've been all flying for quite a while already.
Mm.
And so you want to go where the food, where the tides expose the shoreline for lots and lots of different kinds of food.
Mm, okay. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I saw a hummingbird outside my window today. That was a first for me. So that was kind of cool, at least in this new place I'm in, which is very cool. Okay. And then this event that you're going to be doing along with U.S. Forest Service, the Ranger District, you're going to present something that's going to be next Sunday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Tell me a little bit about what this event is going to be, Gwen.
Yeah, so that'll be out at the Juno Community Garden off Montana Creek, and shout out to the Garden Club for letting us do that there. And it's actually going to be a demonstration of bird banding, and that's where you actually catch a songbird and place like a bracelet on them. And it's a way that we study birds and learn about their survivorship, for example. I do that almost every year out at the garden, so I can actually sometimes recapture birds that were there in the past.
Oh.
So there's lots that you can still learn from banding. It's not going to be like a tag that sends signals. So that bird will have to be caught somewhere else to see if it migrated somewhere. But you can see them up close and do measurements and learn about the birds of the area that way.
So if I go to that event at 8 a.m. on Sunday, May 17th at the community garden, I might be able to put a little band on a bird?
You could watch me put the band on. You have to actually be trained and licensed. But you get to – I let people look really closely. You know, if you actually want to see the bristles, which is like whiskers of bird, you know, that you only really can see if your head's like a foot away from them or less, depending on your vision. So that's that's kind of the beauty of it, is you can see them just real close, especially for folks that maybe don't have great binoculars, great birding skills, maybe they're kids, maybe vision impaired. You know, you can or – not able to walk real well, it's nice to get really close.
And tell me, Gwen, how you got into birding and what you do in terms of getting trained on being able to do these things.
Yeah, I guess I started, I've always liked nature, but I guess I started bird watching a little bit like late high school, early college, and I actually started volunteering to do wildlife rehabilitation, like the Raptor Center used to do here in Juneau, like helping with the injured birds. And that's where I found how interesting it was, all the different wild species that there were. I also did things like raise parrots and doves. People just started giving me birds that they didn't want at one point.
Right, yeah.
So I'm glad that kind of stopped, but yes, yeah.
It's like when you're into like a trinket and then everybody starts to give you that thing, you're like, well, I didn't really like them that much, but yeah, but you do love birds, so that's kind of cool.
I do, but I don't collect live ones anymore. I like to just see them outside.
Awesome. So that event is going to be at the Juneau Community Garden on Sunday, May 17th from 8 to 10 a.m. It's a bird banding demonstration. That's going to be really cool. And then you mentioned there's something else that's going to be happening. Can you tell me a little bit about that other event, Gwen?
Yeah, so the Global Big Day, and that's everybody everywhere can participate. So that's tomorrow, right? And so that's, you just, it's kind of on your own. We're not like leading anything. We're just recommending to go out and
oh, I see. So that's in conjunction with Migratory Bird Day.
Yeah, it's another it's another thing that you can do as a citizen scientist.
Ah, okay, a citizen scientist.
You too can be a citizen
scientist. Yeah, I like that term. That's a cool term.
And we have a lot of walks coming up, which Brenda can tell us.
Yeah. So every Saturday from now through June 27th, we have a Saturday walk.
Okay.
But the one really thing, fun thing about the Global Bird Day, when they ask people to look, you know, there's a little over 10,000 bird species in the world, and last time they saw 9,000 of them on a big day. Yeah, hundreds of thousands of people looked at birds.
Wow,
it's
that's
amazing.
So cool. On that day.
On that day.
And you said how many species are there?
There's over 10,000.
Over 10,000. And so we saw over 9,000 on that day?
In the world.
In the world. That's pretty amazing.
I know when they do the synopsis of that day, it's just so fun. It just the planet lights up with all the places where people looked at birds.
I love that. And so what are we seeing right now, Brenda, in Juneau, now that we're into like, I guess it's, well, not quite the middle of May yet, but we're getting there. What are we seeing now?
Well, lots and lots of migrants, the ones that are going to spend the summer with us, the little warblers are coming back. Lots of the yellow-rumped, like Gwen's picture.
Yeah,
and
let me
lots
pull those
of up. Orange-crowned warblers, and the ones that like the insects usually come about this time of year because we don't have a lot when it's cold.
Right. That's true. Gwen, I have a couple of photos that I'm sharing with those who are on the stream. But can you describe some of the birds that we might see and what would be looking for in terms of like this little guy here?
Yeah, so that's a yellow-rumped warbler, as Brenda mentioned, and a lot of the songbirds that are returning right now, we have a lot of sparrows, and some of those sparrows are going to stay here with us, and some are going to go farther north. So we still have a lot of sparrows, like the golden-crowned sparrow. A lot of people are seeing those, mentioning them around their yard. They're a very large, conspicuous sparrow, and there's hundreds to thousands of them in Juneau right now.
Are they just stopping by on their way north?
Most of them are, yeah. There's a few that do breed in the mountains here. They're like an alpine shrub kind of species in the summer. Mm-hmm. So a few of them will stay, but most of the ones we have right now are headed up to places farther north and east, probably into the Yukon.
I see. Okay. And then I have this other little guy here. Tell me how we describe this guy and how we see. Oh, he's so interesting.
So that was a rufous hummingbird, and I took I selected that individual because he actually has a tiny band on him.
I see. Is that this one down here on his
little
foot.
Yeah, that's okay. His little bracelet, and you can see a little letter which stands for some numbers, and then there's some numbers on there. So I took that photograph. He's probably a bird that I banded last year.
Wow.
It was before I did any banding this year at the community garden, so he's a survivor, and that's just really cool to see him back. He made it through the winter. He probably went down to Mexico and...
What?
Yes.
This little guy went
that
all the way down
guy,
to Mexico?
Yeah. Juneau has a lot of extreme birds, so for their size, they're probably the world's like longest distance migrant because they're, you know, that's a lot of wing beats
and
to
so when
get
we're,
down there.
When we're looking at this this bird, this is a really fascinating. Can you tell me about what's on the neck here? Like, this is really interesting. This kind of like red, it looks like almost like a scarf. Is that how I would be able to tell that this is, what's the name of this one again?
Yeah, the rufous hummingbird. That's
rufous.
Our most common species that you see around here.
Okay. They move so fast, I may not be able to see it, right?
Sure.
That close, but,
yeah.
But because they're usually, you know, fluttering so quickly.
Yeah.
But it's really pretty. So we would see that. And will we see other kind of hummingbirds in Juneau right now, too?
Occasionally, you'll see an Anna's hummingbird. And they're interesting because they actually stay the winter here.
Oh, okay.
But they're fairly uncommon. So you usually see the rufous. And that neck shininess is called a gorget or gorget, depending on how you like to pronounce it.
Okay.
That's just very long, iridescent throat feathers. And they do flare those out to show off.
Now, I know I see like birds in the sky, you know, the swans or the whoever they fly to, not the swans, but you know, they fly together. Do these hummingbirds go as a group too down to Mexico?
Brenda's shaking her head.
No, they go solo. This little bird is going all the solo all the way down to Mexico and then back?
Well, the fun thing is you know, they come up here for the spring flowers, and when they leave, they go up to the alpine and go south on the alpine flowers.
What? Wow, that's amazing. How long is a hummingbird's lifespan?
So some of them can be surprisingly old. The record right now for the rufous hummingbird that's been banded and then recaptured is around 9 to 10 years. There have been some other species that have lived into their teens.
Oh, wow.
So we don't really know the average number, but they can survive quite a while. I've caught a bird here in Juneau that was between five and six years after initial capture. So.
That is so cool. Well, Gwen and Brenda from the Juneau Audubon Society, thank you so much. Tomorrow is World Migratory Bird Day and Big Bird. What did you call the event tomorrow?
eBird's Global Big Day.
Global Big Day. It's the time to go see a bird. If you see a bird, get the free app, the eBird app, report that so that we can maybe beat the record and see all 10,000. That would
yes.
be kind of cool.
Yes, that would be great.
And then next Sunday, May 17th from 8 to 10 a.m., head over to Juneau Community Garden for the bird banding demonstration, as well as to chat with the fine folks from the Audubon Society.
And join us on Saturdays for our bird walks.
Yes, and the bird walks. You can find everything at juneauaudubon.org/events. That's the best place to find out, and you can see what the walk is for that week. I really appreciate you both being here. Gonna cheese.
Thank you.
This is more Chantal Ducart with her new album. This song is called Cake Song here on Juneau Afternoon.
I wanna take
that's going to do it for this week's Juno Afternoon. We are Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives over on KTOO's YouTube page. Support comes from Country Financial, Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tongass Federal Credit Union. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Have an awesome weekend, Juno!